time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Here we go, here we go, here we go.
And the puck is blocked. It's free.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Thursday edition of Overtime. And I got to tell you, folks, there's a reason that I don't like leaving town. It's because these little things called batteries, called computers, get tired and get thinking and you take things for granted. This morning, I hop in here. I'm putting the audio in, trying to get the day started. And my little battery and my little teeny wireless mouse decides it's time to die over Bert's break. So I'm running upstairs, looking through drawers, trying to coerce coworkers to tell me where the batteries are. We're up against it to start the show, but we are back and better than ever here on Overtime. Dustin Baker's here with us. Stone Baker's here with us. We got the whole crew together, and we're excited to bring you this third Thursday, June 27th edition of Overtime here to you. A lot of rain. I hope folks are safe out there. A lot of concern. Obviously, we were out on the road on Friday in southern Minnesota, and I got to tell you, that was very sketchy, very dangerous. Thoughts to all those impacted property-wise, life-wise, and otherwise, because it is a very scary situation. So please, please, please exercise caution as you're out and about on the roads, and also continuing in our area and all of the areas impacted in this region from the flooding. It's great to be back with you. We'll be talking Minnesota Vikings, NFC North buzz. Jordan Love gets a ring on his finger, hopefully another ring on his finger in the coming year or two. J.J. McCarthy working out with one Adam Thielen. We'll break that down. Broader NFL news and nuggets and the best and worst divisions in 2024. I have a feeling that Dustin and I are going to land on some of the same divisions here for best and worst. We're going to do two each and see what we come up with today. Hour number two, highlights and headlines of the day. We'll rewind the first round of the NBA draft, talk to you about some of the best picks made. Timberwolves edition add two players to their roster last night, and best available players, including Bronny James, heading into tonight's round two. PFL comes to the Sioux Falls area and the Sanford Pentagon for the first time. That is the Professional Fighting League, and it's MMA event coming Friday night. Sean O'Connell, the play-by-play broadcaster, will join us around 12:30, and we wrap up today's show with the latest and greatest in the good, the bad, and the ugly. The NBA draft began last night. A lot of stars out and about, and the Atlanta Hawks were up to bat first last night.
With the first pick in the 2024 NBA draft, the Atlanta Hawks select Zachary Risache from Lyon, France, and France's JL Bourg-en-Bresse.
Very exciting stuff. Zachary Risache, the number one overall pick. Here's what the young man had to say about his moment last night being the top pick of the draft.
That was a great feeling. A lot of emotions and, be able to share those emotions with my family was just an incredible moment for me.
Big time moment for him. Alex Sarr was the second overall pick. Both of those young men hailing from France. First time that has happened out of country. Non-United States players 1 and 2 in the NBA's history. At number 8, the Spurs had the selection, but this player ended up joining the Minnesota Timberwolves last night.
With the 8th pick in the 2024 NBA draft, the San Antonio Spurs select Rob Dillingham from the University of Kentucky.
We'll dive into the Dillingham trade momentarily here on the show, but in terms of the overall NBA draft last night, a lot went on, a lot going on. European dominance in the NBA draft, and as far as youngsters go in the game of basketball, is apparent. Here's what Seth Greenberg had to say about the trend of Europeans dominating the NBA draft.
It's the way they train. One, they all can shoot it. Number two is they're playing with adults at an earlier age. They're held much more accountable. They're understanding opposites and spacing, not just individual ball skills, is far superior. to what we're doing in terms of our player development. We do a good job of player development. We don't do a very good job of concept development in our country right now.
And I think a lot of it has to go with the unknown, uncharted territory. We've seen the Victor Wembanyamas of the world all the way back to the Tony Kukoc days where Europe was a mystery. It was a new deal. There was a whole lot of uncertainty, and I still think that prevails in terms of what we see these days. But success begets success. With the Jokic's of the world, the Doncic's of the world being a feast or famine from Europe, it's pretty darn exciting to think about what is potentially out there. Again, the NBA looks at these guys in a different light than what we see from college basketball, the G League, and otherwise. We know those products. We know what the players are getting into. We know the level of competition very, very well in terms of the NBA looking down to those levels. Over to Europe, it's a little bit more topsy-turvy. We're not exactly sure still at this point the overall quality, the overall measurables, but every year you get somebody come out and you have a successful player. I think it eases the overall decision-making. That's why we see Richaché number one, Sar number two last night, night number one of the NBA draft. Coverage continues tonight on ABC and ESPN. Lakers were looking to retain LeBron James, also potentially add Bronny James, maybe just maybe in round two tonight. Evan Cohen was very impressed with their first round pick last night as they land one of the best shooters and shot creators in the entire NBA draft in Tennessee's Dalton Knecht.
Does getting a guy like Knecht, who was supposed to be drafted much higher, offset potentially drafting a guy tonight at 55 in Bronny James, who probably should be drafted lower? Does it kind of even it out a little bit? If you have your report card at school and you come home and you want to show your parents your report card and you get an A in one class and a C in another class, don't you do the, well, I have a B average?
Sometimes you do, but when you have an opportunity to have a B-plus or an A-minus average, that might be better. If you can get yourself an A and an A-minus, A and a B, mom and pop will be very happy as opposed to an A and a C. Hey, this looks good, but that might be in PE, and the C might be in your actual real class out and about. We'll wait and see what happens tonight with the Lakers, but again, people are saying LeBron James always has a roster spot that he gets to choose, depending upon where he's been in his NBA career. Wouldn't surprise me to see Bronny don the Lakers uniform. Certainly could go other places as trade bait as well. But again, we'll wait and see tonight for the NBA draft second night of action. Major League Baseball action from yesterday. Cubs continue their tough stretch of the season. Lost in San Francisco last night 4-3. Philly over Detroit 6-2. Doubleheader action for Atlanta and St. Louis. They split there. New record after both games for the Cardinals 41-38. Houston beats up on visiting Colorado 7-1. Kansas City fends off Miami 5-1. Extra innings for the Milwaukee Brewers and the Texas Rangers. Brewers had a very, very strange way of crawling back into the game. Here's their first big-time play, an inside-the-park home run.
Eovaldi out of the windup, the 1-1. Little soft liner into center and diving and not making the catch as Hillett gets behind him and Jackson's off to the races. He's around second. He is sprinting around third. Here comes the throw to the plate. Chirio's in there safely. Jackson Chirio, a trip around the bases, and we are tied at five.
Five-run eighth inning for Milwaukee. They win it in extras in the 10th inning, 6-5. New record for the Brewers, 48-33. Audio there courtesy of WTMJ. Other finals, Cleveland lost to Baltimore 4-2. Dodgers over the White Sox 4-0. And the Minnesota Twins keep on playing good baseball, 44-36, the new record. Simeon Woods Richardson, remember the name, good start for the young man in his career, 3-1 with a 3.41 ERA after yesterday's win. But the offense coming through again for Minnesota.
First pitch swinging to Castro, and he lifts it down the left field line. That ball is out of here. That ball was way gone down the left field line on the first pitch. 8-1 Minnesota.
Minnesota would hang on to the 8-3 road win over the Diamondbacks. Here's manager Rocco Baldelli on the depth on the offensive side for Minnesota.
One of the best things that I think we can offer offensively is that it's a deep lineup. No matter which way we configure it, no matter who has the day off on that given day, because we're always going to have some good players that are not out there in the starting lineup right now, which is great. It's not a problem. That's really a great thing that you're hoping for. All that said, you know, there are days where the bottom third of the lineup is the most productive third of the lineup. Sometimes it's the middle, sometimes it's the top. And when you see, you know, different, you know, segments of the group going off on the same day, you can do something like we did today. And we've had a handful of days recently where there's guys all over the place that are getting on base, and then there's guys driving them in. And, you know, we don't have to get it done in one inning and then, you know, wait for the next time for that part of the order to come around. That is not even close to where we're at right now. We're feeling good. I know our offensive group feels confident in the at-bats that they're all putting out.
That's Twins manager Rocco Baldelli. Again, new record for Minnesota, 44-36. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Twins at Diamondbacks get going early, 2:40 the start time, 2 o'clock your pregame coverage right here on ESPN Sioux Falls. Cubs at Giants, 2:45 on ESPN+. You got other matchups across the day, Braves at White Sox, Reds at Cardinals, Guardians at Royals. Catch that one on Fox Sports 1 at 7:10. Lastly, for area teams and AL Central teams, Tigers at Angels. Do it late tonight. 8:30, the start time. WNBA, no games to recap, but today and tonight in the WNBA, Lynx at Wings get started here in less than an hour at noon. Aces at Sky, 6 o'clock on Prime Video. Fever at the Storm, that's a 9 o'clock jump time. Indiana has won 4 of their last 5. NFL news, few and far between these days, but Jordan Love's contract will get done sometime soon. Damian Woody says that Jordan Love has elevated things and his trajectory continues to soar.
He's just on this trajectory that, you know, not far from now, we could be having a conversation about maybe Jordan Love could be the best quarterback in the league. Like, that's the type of ability that he displayed in the second half of the season last year. And the great thing about it, he has the youngest group of skilled players in the National Football League around him. So they're all growing together. They're all getting better. It's very scary. That the Green Bay Packers could be a very, very scary team with Jordan Love as a quarterback.
Jordan Love, again, quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, likely to get the contract done sometime soon. I'm not going to speculate whether or not it gets done before Dak Prescott or Tua. We will wait and see. NASCAR races at Nashville on Sunday, 2:30 on NBC, and the PGA Tour right back at it. The Rocket Mortgage Classic begins from Detroit Golf Club in Detroit, Michigan, later on, is underway. We'll run through Sunday here momentarily. Now, let's dive into all things NFL, NBA draft, and more. Dustin Baker, back and better than ever once again for another Thursday edition of the show. My friend, welcome back. How you been?
Not bad. We are 10 weeks away from the first regular season game. That'll be Thursday night football, so count them down, 70 days.
And I wanted to ask you, I wanted to go ahead and give you a compliment. You're one of the more in-tune people in terms of calendars and countdowns. And I know you do this for a living. You write these articles and you kind of speculate and talk down the way, but I feel like you've always got such a great beat on things. I just kind of am very aloof, like living in the moment here. You got 10 weeks. Is that right?
10 weeks. 10 weeks from tonight.
Can't wait for that. So obviously a ton to look forward to. We got the Hall of Fame game for the preseason kickoff coming up soon as well. The last week in Vikings news we'll dive into. Give me your thoughts though. NBA draft last night. What stood out to you?
There were a few things that stood out. I think at the top of the ticket, it was kind of a blah draft because we didn't have a consensus number one. We didn't have a hype train for Wimby, for example, in this draft. But I liked how the networks and the pundits still found a way to get excited about it, even though it was considered a mid-draft. I loved what the Washington Wizards did, specifically because they're rebuilding. And I do believe rebuilding works in the NBA. It's kind of a crapshoot in the NFL because there's, you know, 53 players on a team. But I think there is a science that says rebuilding in the NBA works. So the Wizards got, was it Alex Saar,
yep,
Bob Carrington, Kaishan George. And then they had a sweet trade where they stockpiled some assets with the Blazers. Last year they had a good draft. So I like that they're kind of turning it around. And then the Timberwolves trade for Dillingham was really cool because that was about the only way that they could add somebody, a somewhat impact player. They don't have any money to do it in free agency. And if they don't want to trade Karl-Anthony Towns or sever ties with Rudy Gobert, they had to do this. And it was a nice little trade up the draft board. One thing that I had in kind of an epiphany, and maybe the rest of the world already knows this, is I often, when I talk about the NBA with my friends and colleagues, I talk about how there's just so many good players now, or the West has 10 good teams. And I had an epiphany last night. It's because we have all these international players. We didn't have as many, hardly any, when I was a kid. So if you look at like the top 10 players in the NBA, about half of them are international. And it was a light bulb moment that the reason, that, you know, in January or February, you look at the standings and you're like, man, all these teams are good. It's because we have this influx of just an extra batch of players that we didn't have 25, 30 years ago. And I think that's why the Olympics will be so competitive this year, where it's no longer just a cakewalk for the Americans.
And definitely true there. Rob Dillingham, eighth overall pick of the Spurs. He's a Timberwolf, though, with the trade there. We'll dive into those details very shortly. 27th overall pick belonged to Minnesota. That was Terrence Shannon Jr., the shooting guard out of Illinois. So, again, backcourt work for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Exciting stuff. And, again, a succession plan for Mike Conley. That's a good, savvy move for Minnesota, team that was right there, make no mistake about it, and a couple dynamic first-round picks to kind of give you that extra boost. We'll wait and see. Your Lakers, though, what do you think about Dalton Connect, the addition there?
Well, they kept saying on the telecast last night that general managers don't like guys that are that old. He's like 23, you know, they want the teen years so that the guy can grow and develop under their watch. For immediate impact, Connect should be playable, and it's easy to say that the day after the draft in any sport, like, hey, this guy's going to be a stud. But if you assume that LeBron opts out but then opts back in, which is kind of how he's trending to do, yeah, it's a good move, but I am notoriously sour and low on the Lakers. If I were LeBron, I would pack it up and go to Cleveland or Miami. You know, two places he's already been, because I'm of the opinion that the Lakers experiment is stale. And I know that they'll find a way to get their third superstar, like DeMar DeRozan or somebody. But just after that speech I just gave, I don't think that whatever the Lakers do, it's going to have to gel in year one with J.J. Redick as the coach. We're going to have to hope it magically works, because LeBron's only got a year or two left. I think he should hit the road, but I just don't think he will.
And again, the international player dominant, something to keep an eye on, because three Frenchmen went in the top six picks. You had Richache and Sarr, and then Saloon, I believe is how you say, the sixth overall pick that went to the Charlotte Hornets. Zach Edey, the big from Purdue, lands in Memphis. That's pretty intriguing. What do you think about his body type in the NBA? It's not often you find a big, massive lumberer like that. And make no mistake about it, you put him next to Nikola Jokic, very different athletically. So Edey, we'll see what he can do there in Memphis, but an intriguing pick and an intriguing pairing.
Yeah, I don't know that he was supposed to fall that far, you know, because coordinated, humongous guys are usually a precious asset. And Wemby, of course, set the bar last year for being even exceeding expectations, in my opinion, because he plays defense so well. I think it can work, but the NBA draft is just like the NFL draft, where every other player is not going to work out. And it's always weird to me that there isn't one GOAT scout. Like, there isn't one guy who gets it right 95% of the time. And you would think after all these years, there would be some sort of guy or gal who's labeled as, you know, this guy knows how to scout. But in any draft, it's always such, pretty much every other guy is pretty good or not good.
And it's pretty darn interesting. NBA draft done with round number one last night. And again, in case you missed it, Baylor Shireman, former South Dakota State Jackrabbit, Nebraska native, had 3 years up in Brookings, 2 years down in Omaha with the Creighton Blue Jays. He goes number 30 overall last night, joining the reigning NBA champion Boston Celtics. Congratulations to Baylor Shireman. Tremendous amount of support this a part of the country, and moves over to Boston to join that phenomenal team and sharpen his saw, if you will, and get on the NBA floor before too long. There's a lot of Vikings news, I'm sure, to get to, NFL chatter, and much, much more. J.J. McCarthy working out with Adam Thielen. We will break all of that down coming up next. It's an exciting time of the offseason. Don't let anyone tell you it's not. Everything is newsworthy these days in the NFL. We dive headfirst into the Minnesota Vikings chatter coming up next. Dustin Baker in for his usual whole hour in hour number one. Vikes Now on YouTube, VikingsTerritory.com. Viking Territory on Twitter. We talk about those Vikings when we come back on Overtime.
Streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
right back with you on this Thursday edition of Overtime. Our conversations during the break never cease to amaze me. The topics we touch on with Dustin Baker of VikingsTerritory.com. A lot going on, as always. Nothing crazy noteworthy in the last week in regards to the Minnesota Vikings, but I did want to pick your brain first and foremost. This is the fun topic out there on social media. J.J. McCarthy is working out with somebody new and notable. Tell us about it.
It's Adam Thielen, and Vikings fans saw this and thought, yes, because it's two commodities that we know and love. So Adam Thielen is a Carolina Panther. He signed a three-year deal last year for $25 million. So no, he's not coming to the Vikings. But J.J. McCarthy notably said about 2 weeks ago that he's staying in Minnesota until training camp to get a better hold on the playbook. Also music to our ears. So evidently, Adam Thielen just came home and wanted to toss around the rock with the Vikings' new quarterback. I will mention, for those that are Thielen truthers, but hey, can he come back to the Vikings? Next offseason, it's pretty easy for him to get out, or the Panthers to say sayonara. But Thielen will be 35 at this time next year. I don't know if he would fit on the Vikings roster. But yeah, I think for the June aesthetic, having your quarterback of the future throwing to probably a top three beloved Viking in history because of his story, that's pretty cool.
I think it's cool as well. And Adam Thielen, make no mistake about it, I don't think anyone last year when he signed with the Panthers was like, ooh, what a great landing spot. It was more of a, why would a team that young and that bad try to sign a veteran wide receiver who's trying to go win a title? Thielen did have a pretty good year last year, 1,000 receiving yards, 103 catches, just 4 touchdowns. But on that offense, that's prolific. So I thought he was pretty good. Get you warm and fuzzy. But I will tell you this, in terms of Thielen, not this year, maybe trade deadline. You never know what happens, injuries and otherwise. But I do feel like he's a guy that's going to come back and play a year or two to finish the career in Minnesota. And it'll be a cheap, team-friendly deal. And instead of retiring on a one-day contract, I could see Thielen coming back and playing for a year or two for Minnesota, even when he's 35 and he maybe has 15, 20, 30 catches in a year.
The ironic part is they need him right now at WR3, in my opinion. We have such a broad mystery about who will end up as the WR3. In theory, if Thielen was chilling there on the free agent wire, they'd probably scoop him in a heartbeat. It's just that when he was no longer part of the Vikings world, it's that he wasn't good enough for WR2. And now, bada bing, the Vikings have Jordan Addison. But yeah, it's kind of interesting that if the Vikings, if Adam Thielen was available, they'd probably scoop him at WR3.
It is interesting, too, when you talk about his stats. I'm just looking at this because I'm a numbers nerd. 1,000 yards receiving last year with the Carolina Panthers, right? That is his first 1,000-yard receiving season since 2018. It feels like he's been really rock solid. He's had been a little dinged up down the stretch, 19 and 20, missed a decent amount of time in 2021 as well. But a little bit of a resurgence. Nobody's banking on him returning to elite form, as in not elite receiver, but elite Adam Thielen form. But I could see that being a reunion down the line. Anything else standing out this past week as far as newsworthy items, things that popped on video or anything else from a Vikings perspective?
Yes, but let me first say that the Panthers wide receiver room is now more crowded than last year with the addition of Legetti, DJ Chark, Jonathan Mingo should somewhat take a next step. So Thielen probably won't replicate that 1,000 yards, though you are correct. It was his best season by numbers since 2018. No, this is the dry spell, the dry season on the calendar. But there are a couple things. So there, in that same vein, Adam Thielen was on a podcast with Barstool Sports last week, and he said the Patriots tried to make a deal, trade for him in 2019, the offseason 2019, and that was notably after he got in an argument with Bill Belichick during the 2018 season. So for June content, that was noteworthy that Thielen, in theory, could have gone elsewhere. There was also an interview with Cameron Bynum, who is the Vikings' starting safety next to Harrison Smith. A couple of things came out of that. First, he said the Vikings expect to win the Super Bowl this year. It's like, all right, that's the first guy that said that. Even fans don't think the Vikings are going to win the Super Bowl this year. But players play, and so they're always going to embark on a season with the mindset that we can win this thing. And then he indicated, I'm not sure if it was lip service or rah-rah, that the quarterback battle is pretty even. He said both guys look pretty equal, and it's a good problem to have. Whereas over the last month, we have trended to think, well, this is going to be Sam Darnold no matter what. And then the question now is, what week will McCarthy take over? Cameron Bynum seemed to dial that back. And then on a personal thing, I put out a poll in that same spirit that said, left up to Vikings fans, who do you want to start week one? Well, that poll finalized after our show last week, and 86% of people said they want Sam Darnold to start week one for the Vikings. And that was striking to me, because if I would have conducted that poll on April 30th, right after the draft, it would have been at least 50-50 and probably heavy on McCarthy. So I think we have been baked into the culture of thinking, you know, it's going to be Sam Darnold, so I better get on the train and accept it. It's really weird if you think about it. And there's like 1,000 people that replied to that poll. The Vikings have a brand new quarterback for the first time since Teddy Bridgewater, a rookie, that is. And the fan base, at least to start the season, wants a journeyman bust in Sam Darnold. So it's the way Vikings usually do business at quarterback, and fans, it really surprised me that that wasn't closer to the middle. It was 86% in favor of Darnold.
And I'm going to be honest with you, I think that says more about J.J. McCarthy than it does anything else. I know the Vikings' M.O. recently is to start the aging guy, the free agent, the retread, whatever it might be, but I think it says more that these Vikings fans view McCarthy as that valuable, and hey, let's keep him innocent and keep him good as long as we can. Wait till he's ready. Let's tiptoe around. I'm glad you're here, because of course I know the Packers inside and out, but you know the Vikings inside and out when it comes to Ponder, Bridgewater, Culpepper, those guys that were rookies, even Tavares Jackson in the mix. Mm-hmm. How quickly have the Vikings been in the past of starting these guys on day one?
Never. No Vikings rookie quarterback has ever started week one in Vikings history. So if McCarthy shocks the world and is the guy against the Giants, he would be the first. But no, the Vikings are actually really low on the list of when you would acclimate a new quarterback to QB1. Dante Culpepper sat for a year behind Jeff George, and then Dante took over and reached the NFC Championship his first season as a starter. Let's see, Christian Ponder got in the middle of 2011 because Donovan McNabb was so bad. He was supposed to be like Darnold right now, like, hey, we're going to squeeze the good part out of him, and that didn't work at all. Yep. And then Tarvaris Jackson was always kind of a lottery ticket. He was a mid-rounder rather than a first-rounder. He showed a couple promises of being good, but when he got in, it was more experimental, whereas the other guys we've talked about, like, hey, you better be good. And then Bridgewater, outside of Culpepper on this little list, was the most fun, because the Vikings in 2014 went into it with Matt Cassel, and he was going to start indefinitely, kind of like Darnold right now. But then Cassel got hurt in week two, and that was the first time in my life I felt like a piece of you-know-what. I remember being happy that Cassel was hurt, because I was so excited to see Bridgewater. And then Bridgewater looked great in the first game. He was running all over the field. His version of accuracy kind of underneath was there. So Bridgewater, until the gruesome injury, you know, he was supposed to be the guy, and that lasted a whole two seasons. So this is a little bit different that McCarthy is so young, and you know we're in a new era where quarterbacks can reasonably start right away, but we're pretty confident it's going to be Darnold no matter what.
There's all sorts of stuff out there in terms of this or that this time of year. Minnesota Vikings news and coverage, VikingsTerritory.com. As we go to break, though, you got an article out you put out yesterday, the Mount Rushmore of the Vikings offseason. What's that about?
That is the basically a cute way of saying the four best decisions of the offseason. And what I went through there was finding a way to retain Brian Flores. If the defense wants continuity and improvement, the best way to do that was to keep hold of Flores. Now, he didn't have a whole lot of nibbles for head coaching job, but he's one of the top paid coordinators in the league. The other was ending the Kirk Cousins era. Even though I enjoyed Cousins and what he did for the Vikings, it was time to move on and change. Sometimes you just have to change. Finally, getting Justin Jefferson's deal was on the Mount Rushmore. I labeled these by president, by the way. That's my political science background. And then number one, or Abraham Lincoln, was drafting J.J. McCarthy and not having to trade the farm. There was a period of about a month, 5-6 weeks, where we thought the Vikings inevitably were going to trade 3 first rounders for Drake May or J.J. McCarthy, and they didn't have to do that.
Interesting stuff. I remember when that Houston Texans trade first came out, that was the overall guiding narrative, was that they got that in order to trade 3 first round picks up for J.J. McCarthy. They ended up shuffling around, moving up from both spots, landing 2 first round picks, and the future very bright in the Twin Cities for the Minnesota Vikings. We keep the Vikings narrative and talk keeping on going here into the next segment. Broader NFL news and nuggets, what's going on around the league, latest transactions, latest chatter, and much, much more coming up next, including a very scary situation for one former Green Bay Packer wide receiver. We'll dive into that and much, much more next on Overtime. It's Welcome Back Thursday, the June 27th edition of the show, and it rolls along next right here on ESPN Sioux Falls.
Yes.
ESPN. More of Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on the Thursday edition of Overtime. Burt Ramin here with you. Dustin Baker alongside for his usual hour each and every Thursday. Time to talk some broader NFL news and nuggets. And first things first, I was going to stash this for the good, the bad, the ugly. But this one, a really good story out of a very scary and bad situation. Former Packer receiver, former Cowboy, former Texan, Randall Cobb and his family escaped a fire at their Nashville, Tennessee home this week, with his wife Ada posting, "We are lucky to be alive." Ada Cobb posted to her Instagram story that this week that a Tesla charger caught fire in the garage late last night and quickly spread through their home. "We got out of the house with nothing but the clothes on our back and no shoes on our feet. The Cobbs have three young sons. Everyone is okay." Very scary situation. Of course, the 33-year-old Cobb continuing his NFL career, hoping to do so. Currently a free agent, played 10 years with the Green Bay Packers and has also played with the Dallas Cowboys and the Houston Texans alongside the recent play with the New York Jets. Other news here, I wanted to get your take on this. We talked a little bit about him a couple weeks ago. Indianapolis Colts quarterback Anthony Richardson is a full go for training camp despite shoulder soreness the second-year player experienced earlier this month. Colts general manager Chris Ballard said the team is not concerned about the shoulder fatigue that Richardson felt at the end of OTAs in minicamp. 22 years old, Ballard saying he's a full go all the way up until the last day of OTAs. What do you make about the overall ceiling and floor of Indianapolis? Because if you look at a roster, you look at the offensive line, the playmakers on the outside, even the wide receiver three battle there is going to be a big deal. I like their offense. I don't love the defense in Indianapolis. Certainly some room to grow. Where do you think that the Colts fit into that hierarchy in the AFC? And is this a potential playoff team?
Well, yeah, they were a playoff team last year.
Yep.
That's why I like them for the purposes of this conversation. If they were able to get to the dance with Gardner Minshew, when you drafted Anthony Richardson, you wanted to be a lot better than Minshew. So if he is healthy, he looked great for the first few games last year. Yeah, they can be one of those teams that's right there in December and January, in the mix at 7-6, that kind of thing. I do like their roster as well. With Richardson, he had so little experience comparatively at Florida that you just hoped that raw skill set would translate to the NFL. And for those first few games, it certainly did. Fantasy football managers love him. So yeah, I would be somewhat bullish on the Colts. But the thing, like a lot of teams that we'll talk about before the start of the regular season, it's all dependent on quarterback. Like Richardson has to be at least as good as Minshew or better for them to move the needle, because the AFC is going to be crowded with postseason combatants.
Anthony Richardson, obviously last year with the shoulder injuries, the aggressive running style, I think most fans were watching him and were excited, but also did a lot of the, as he got the hits here at the goal line or around a first down. 577 yards, 3 touchdowns and 1 pick, 60% complete. Percentage, had 4 touchdowns on the ground and 136 yards. Where do you slide him into these quarterbacks? Because Will Levis had a pretty strong rookie year. Anthony Richardson had his moments. He's a good young quarterback and could kind of vault himself into that top 16, top 10-ish conversation if he has a really great year. I'm not saying that's out there, but when you talk about valuing him, you can spin it from a fantasy football angle or not. Seems like he's got a pretty decent outlook this year and beyond.
Yeah, well, first, Will Levis is another guy who needs to learn how to slide, and he's not even built like Richardson.
Yep.
That was the knock on him, is he's a little reckless and just doesn't have the gumption to get down. With Richardson, it's hard to put him in a quarterback power ranking because of such small sample size, but you'd yearn for the upside and then hope for the best. I would put him, you know, in that 20 to 16 range, and that's mostly because of what we know he can be based on his physical tools, skill set. The only problem with him right now is because he missed ultimately 12 games, almost all of his rookie season, there's no more house money for injury. If he gets hurt again in week, whatever, 2-10, and he's lost for the season, he's going to be labeled as one of those guys throughout all of sports. Like, yeah, but can he stay healthy? So it's sad for him because it's out of his control. I think that Colts fans and then the NFL body politic will watch on pins and needles, because we know he can look good, but he cannot succumb to another season-ending injury, and a lot of that has to do with his style of play. So he'll have to find that balance that some can find and some cannot, where it's, you know, you got to get down and live to see another play.
Kansas City Chiefs don't get talked a whole lot these days because they're so darn good and consistent, just won another Super Bowl. Their wide receiver core is a concern for the third straight offseason. They've got all sorts of movers and shakers. Of course, the offseason situations with Rashee Rice. Travis Kelce's a year older. They had Marquez Valdes-Scantling leave town. Couple additions, though. They re-signed Mecole Hardman. They got Marquise Brown on the roster. They also drafted a youngster, Xavier Worthy. The overall concern level, the first year without Tyreek Hill, that was the big story. The second year, last year, coming in there with rookies and more hodgepodge. Even though they won a Super Bowl the first year, they didn't have Tyreek Hill. It was still a concern and a weakness on the roster. My opinion here is, until Kelce finally starts to slow down, he hasn't even started to slow down, but until he finally starts to slow down, I don't think the overall pass catchers will be that big of a concern in Kansas City. What say you?
Well, the proof is in the pudding. They matter so long as they're not making huge gaffes in the postseason. We've already seen them make the gaffes in the regular season. And interestingly, I was doing some sort of exercise for my writing stuff, and I kind of thought the opposite when I stumbled across the Chiefs' depth chart at wide receiver. I was like, this looks pretty good compared to the last 2 years. You have Rajee Rice, who
might be suspended for a while.
I was going to say, we'll see when he plays. In its purest form, if Rajee Rice is done with his shenanigans and he does play, Hollywood Brown, if anybody can make him relevant, it's going to be Mahomes. And then they have the speedster, Xavier Worthy, from the draft. And then it's the guys that we become accustomed to who used to be the Chiefs' WR1s, like Sky Moore, Justin Watson, Kadarius Toney. So when you look at the top of the ticket and it says Rajee Rice, Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy, and then, by the way, Travis Kelce, I like that for the upside of what their offense can be. And let's face it, so long as they don't have crucial January drops, it really doesn't matter who plays receiver for that team because the quarterback is so good. So I am actually more encouraged by the receiver room this year than I have in the past 2 years. But I will say, I am struggling to figure out who's going to be my Super Bowl pick. I'm not going to pick the Chiefs again because I just don't think that they're going to be the first team to three-peat.
Okay, give me this then. You can look up there and look at the teams just to have them available. That's that top part, the AFC. Give me the one team that you're most confident in, not winning the Super Bowl, but being in the Chiefs' way this year. Is it Baltimore? Is it the Jets? The Dolphins? Could be the Bengals? Could be the Browns in that defense? Give me one team that you're most confident in being in the Chiefs' way. They don't have to go win the Super Bowl, but what team could represent the AFC in the Super Bowl instead of Kansas City?
I'm going to pick the Jets to go a long way, but my answer here is the Bengals. Yep. And that's because they seem to be the kryptonite to the Chiefs. There was that really weird stat. There was like four straight wins by the Bengals over the Chiefs before the Chiefs finally got them. And I expect the Bengals to have a better season this year than last year. They were the one team, I think, that didn't make the postseason from the AFC North, who we're going to talk about next segment. So I think that the Bengals are due for a healthy Burrow year and subsequently to be there when it matters in January. And on top of that, we've already seen that they're a big pain in the rump for the Chiefs. So I don't know if it's necessarily Joe Burrow's year, but they will be there when I start to make my playoff predictions. And there's a lot of parity this year in the NFL if you assume the Chiefs aren't going to three-peat. I challenge the listeners to start thinking about who can win the Super Bowl if it's not the Chiefs. And you'll probably end up with something sexy like, hey, the 49ers versus the Ravens again. But I am out on the Ravens. They really pissed me off last year in the AFC Championship. So lifeless at home against a Chiefs team that wasn't absolutely unbeatable.
Yeah, and the Niners, I know, have put a sour taste in a lot of their fans' mouths too, because they're on a long winless streak in the biggest game as well. They've been there several times, one of the best teams. And everybody says, great roster, they're going to get it done. Shanahan's offense. And every time they get there, it just seems like there's something wrong. And they kind of limped through the NFC playoffs, barely beat the Packers, barely beat the Lions. I don't really know what their staying power looks like, but it's anyone's season. It's very exciting stuff. Lastly, New York Giants have a big article up right now, ESPN.com, how Brian Daboll and the Giants are rebuilding ahead of this year. They got Drew Lock there at quarterback to perhaps challenge Daniel Jones. All sorts of other stuff going on. Last year started out with that absolutely embarrassing 40-0 loss against the Cowboys in week one. They averaged, 11.8 points through 2-8 record through 10 weeks last year. All sorts of coaching tension. Any confidence in the Giants figuring this out and maybe winning 8 games this year? Is that doable?
No, I think that is probably too bold. They have been through a strange odyssey on Dable's watch. So they got pretty darn good in December 2022, and then they beat the Vikings in the playoffs 2022. And then I found it so odd that there was no enthusiasm, no steam for them to improve the following year. When you started at this time last year, when you're looking at over-unders for win-loss totals, they were like at 6.5, 7.5. And I was like, why doesn't anybody think that they have a building block here? They won a playoff game. Daniel Jones got his contract.
New contract. Yeah.
Nobody believed in it. And all of those folks were right. So now we're in the same spot where Daboll is probably on the hot seat. We went through 6 weeks of wondering if they were going to take a quarterback, and they ultimately did not. They got Malik Nabers, who should be a stud. But the good thing for them is they can hit the reset button pretty easily next offseason if they realize that Daniel Jones was only good for a month or two in 2022. That guy in the most touchdown passes he's thrown in a season is 15.
Yeah.
He somehow got that, at the time, large contract. So, no, I think the NFC, just like the AFC, there's going to be too many good teams nibbling at a wild card. I think it would be too bold to assume the Giants will win 8 games, but I'm a Drew Lock guy. If Jones gets benched, I would love to see Drew Lock get in there.
Certainly all sorts of storylines emerging right now, this stage of the offseason, 10 weeks away from getting things really fired up, training camp, preseason in between now and then as well. Coming up next, we wrap up the hour with our best and worst NFL divisions for next year. We got two each. Both of us are going to land on the same one for the best. I think number one, it's easy. It's the AFC North. We'll tell you why, and other divisions that have our eye and our focus, good and bad and otherwise. That's coming up next to round out our number one on a Thursday.
Get ESPN with the free app and online. Grab your phone or call us up on your smart device. Now let's get you back to overtime with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Winding down our number one this Thursday, June 27th of the show. Thanks so much for being with us. Dustin Baker is with us as always for his usual hour. You can find him at Dust Baker on Twitter, VikingsTerritory.com. Great show on YouTube, Vikes Now as well. We went through the Vikings news, NFL news, and more. And it's time for us to talk about best and worst divisions for this year. We're going to land on the same one right off the jump. It's going to be the AFC North, and we already agreed upon that. I'm waiting to see where we land for our second pick for a really good division. But the AFC North, Bengals, Browns, Ravens, Steelers. I think the Steelers are the worst team there. They're a fringe playoff team. They've been that way for the last 5 years. You said the Bengals likely to be the team that's in the way. Cleveland, though, doesn't get talked about. I think it's the mystery at quarterback, the premium defense, everything across the board. What stands out to you the most about this division just from an intrigue perspective?
It's been this way for, this is probably the third straight season, maybe fourth straight season, basically since Joe Burrow got good, that every time one of these teams plays each other, it's a really good game. And once you have that in play, that means you have the best division in football. I am skittish about predicting 3 playoff teams from this division because that usually doesn't happen in back-to-back seasons. And if you want to make your predictions, and you want other teams to get in because the NFL notoriously has playoff turnover where half the teams from the year before don't make it. I don't think it's going to be 3 teams from the AFC North. However, that doesn't reduce the respectability of the rosters. I think I said a couple times on this show that I think Lamar Jackson, unfortunately, will encounter some kind of injury. He's due for that, and that will derail the Ravens. Pittsburgh will be just good enough to be relevant. That's what they do. I hope Justin Fields turns out to be good for them because now that he's no longer a Chicago Bear, I can say, hey, I hope this guy succeeds. And then Cleveland, I think they overachieved last year. The Deshaun Watson experiment has not worked. Maybe it turns around. So that leaves me with the Bengals as the glowing team, the last team standing. But all of that said, all of the AFC North teams have a path to be at least 9 or 8 or better. And you cannot say that about any other division unless you're speaking, you know, in sunshine and rainbows terms.
Derrick Henry joins the Ravens, that I wanted to get your take on statistically for him. He's going to get the rock a ton. There's a couple young backs there in Baltimore that could challenge a little bit. Not challenge for his spot, but challenge for some carries. Derrick Henry ran for 2,000 yards back in 2020. Has put up a couple 1,500-plus yard seasons. Last year, 1,167, still led the league in totes from the ground perspective. Over under Derrick Henry, 1,200 yards this year.
Oh, man, I have to take into account injury here. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer and say everybody on the Ravens gets injured, so I'll go over 1,200. Not by much, because he can still get that and miss a game or two. In redraft fantasy football leagues, folks are pretty high on Derrick Henry, which is unusual for an old running back. Dynasty, he's kind of cooked. But, yeah, I like that fit, but I'm just convinced that the Ravens are due for some sort of injury. Otherwise, their roster is pretty damn sweet.
I think we're going to land on the same one, but what's your other best division for next year?
No, I think we're going to differ here. I have AFC East.
Ooh, wow, yep. We are going to differ.
Yep,
absolutely.
I do not have the NFC North, which is kind of a new trendy pick. The reason that I don't have the NFC North is nobody knows if the Bears or Vikings are going to be any good.
Yep.
We have the enthusiasm. They got their young quarterbacks. But I don't know if J.J. McCarthy is going to be good. I sure hope so. And with Caleb Williams, it's not like the Bears haven't ever messed up a quarterback. So in order for them to surpass the AFC East in my books, I need to see it and believe it with my own eyes. The AFC East, however, even though the Bills are going through a transformation on their depth chart, Josh Allen will keep them good. Miami is good. You know, they're really fast, really talented. We'll see if they ever take the next step in the postseason. They're going to be there. I really believe Aaron Rodgers with the Jets will work. And then I think the Patriots are going to start climbing upward because of a new regime, and I am a Drake May guy. So when I look at three teams that I considered guaranteed to be good, that's more guaranteed teams in the NFC North for me.
And that's interesting, too. You're going with that that high ceiling with those contending teams. My thing with the NFC North, just the high floor. The worst team in that division, I think, is going to win 7 or 8 games.
Yeah.
And I believe that with Minnesota Vikings, Chicago Bears, probably either of those teams. I view the Packers and the Lions as being playoff teams. I know that there's a lot of eye rolls out there. I can feel you. AFC South, though, is a team that I put in parentheses. That's an up-and-coming division with the Jags, the Texans, the Colts, and the Titans. All four of those teams working their way up. Some things to be excited about. I wouldn't put them in a big, strong division, but as far as not having an absolutely terrible team in it, that's a good division as well. Bad divisions this upcoming year, I'll start with the AFC West. I feel like that year, every year, it's the Chiefs and everyone else. Broncos will be maybe a little bit better. Raiders aren't going anywhere fast. And then, of course, the other teams within the division not going anywhere fast either. The Chargers with a new head coach. That was on my list. Did that make your list, the AFC West, for a bad division?
It did, but I felt real gross putting them in there because the Super Bowl champs live there. So
yep.
This is not a Chiefs speech whatsoever, Chiefs fans. It's just that it's going to take probably a year for Jim Harbaugh to get his tentacles in the Chargers and make them relevant. So if you assume that is correct and that a good season for the Chargers is maybe 8-9, the Broncos have quarterback mystery just like the Vikings. And then the Raiders are like the one team in football that doesn't have a long-term quarterback plan unless they secretly like Aiden O'Connell. Yeah, I feel really grimy saying, hey, the AFC West sucks when the Chiefs lives there, but it have to be them.
And definitely interesting. My last division here, NFC South. No surprise, just a bunch of okay teams. And then the worst team in football, worst organization right now in football, in the Carolina Panthers. Saints will be worse. Bucks will be about the same, maybe a little bit worse. Falcons should be better. But if that blows up like we've seen it happen in the past with the hot, trendy teams in an offseason, Falcons are on the list, short list of many fans, many analysts are saying, that team's going to the playoffs. They got the quarterback. They got other playmakers. Bijan's older. The defense is better. That whole division scares me and is a little bit yucky. Has been for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I do not like the NFC South to be a good division this year.
Yeah, there is no division in football that is wholesale bad. Like, every team is just bad. So the best way to describe the NFC South is it's mid. Like, all of those teams are mediocre. Thankfully, they have easy schedules because they play each other so much. So when you pull up any metric that adjudicates strength of schedule, it's always Kirk Cousins and the Falcons that have easiest schedule, which makes my eyes roll to the back of my head. But they're going to beat up on each other. The Falcons have the roster talent, especially on offense, to get to 10-7 or so. I don't know what the Saints are doing. All of those years when you start an offseason, you go look at them at the very bottom of the salary cap, $80 million in the red. It's finally coming true right now. The cap is not a myth, and they're stuck in this mediocrity of a ceiling of 7-10 or 8-9 because of the way they manage their cap. Tampa Bay, I think, will certainly be one of those teams that doesn't make the postseason this year that made it last year. I think they overachieved. And then the Panthers will get better, but the problem is they have to get better from 3-14, which means 6-11 would be cause for a parade there if they improve by 3 wins. Overall, that division is mid.
And I think that we're on the same page there. AFC North, NFC North for me on the good division side. You can lump in the AFC East for Dustin Baker, and we're on the same page. Worst divisions, AFC West, NFC South. Here to round out the show. We're off next week. Happy 4th of July. Enjoy it. Stone, I hope you have a blast as well. We'll do it again in 2 weeks. Always appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to tell people tonight to watch the presidential debate. I don't know how we got to this spot in American culture where it's like, oh, I don't want to watch that crap. As soon as we stop caring about democracy, that's when it ends. So whoever you got in the debate, watch the presidential debate.
Always a great message. Appreciate the feedback as well. Dustin Baker at Dust Baker, VikingsTerritory.com, Vikes Now on YouTube. And with that, that's hour number one on a Thursday. Gone in a hurry. Tomorrow on the show, High Noon Showdown, Friday Parlay, so much more on the way. We're back with more of the show here. Headlines of the day, rewinding the NBA draft, PFL, Professional Fighting League, play-by-play broadcaster Sean O'Connell joins us at 12:30. So much more on the way. Thursday of Overtime continues next right here on ESPN Sioux Falls.